The Bible promises beauty for ashes, and that God will make all things new. That takes on new meaning for some today.
The diversion of water. California has been in a battle with the Democrat Party for water. Our California growers want water. Our farmers, our dairymen want water. We have been absolutely, and I think, by the way, President Trump put an accurate comment out recently, that the Democrat Party in California has starved the citizenry of the water that's provided in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. In part one of our program, our guest host is Mark Henry, who talks to Mondo Gonzalez. In part two, Ken Michael and Josh Schwartz talk to Seth Gruber to round out the hour. Here is today's programming.
How did this fire start? They never tell us. Just a few weeks ago, there was a fire nearby in Malibu. Soledad Osua, who's on the board of Golden Together, she's very convinced that it was a homeless encampment that started that fire. Hundreds of fires a year started because of homeless encampments that are not cleared away by the authorities right across California. Look at the leadership, if you can call it that, in Los Angeles. Mayor Karen Bass cutting the fire department's budget, just arriving back from Africa, where she was on a trip for some pointless ceremony that she's going to the inauguration of the president of Ghana, but she's not going to the inauguration of our president here. And she's stopped at the airport and she literally freezes in silence when a reporter asks her for some kind of comment. I've never seen anything like it. It's a total catastrophic failure of competent leadership here in California. Additionally, the ideology, the far left ideology that prioritizes all this other nonsense instead of practical steps to keep us safe and make our lives better.
Welcome to Understand the Times Radio. I'm Mark Henry, filling in for Jan Markell. Jan will be back with us next week. Well, in our time today, we're going to cover a number of items. We got President Trump's inauguration on Monday. What's that look like for America? What's that look like for Israel? What does that look like for our economy? Was this the hand of God to have him serve at this time in history? And we're going to be talking about that. We're going to also be looking in Revelation 17 and the 10 kings that are going to rise up and give power to the beast. We're also going to be looking at the Middle East, and we've seen Iran in these last 6 months being defanged, if you will. And what is Israel going to do next? How are they going to deal with that nuclear threat? Is that going to be brought to an end as we look into 2025? And then, of course, we're going to be talking about the fires. Think about it. Just the last couple of months, we've seen the Carolinas flood. We've seen Middle America frozen. We've seen California covered in fires. And the question is, was this ultimately brought about because of the mocking of God, as we saw in Hollywood? We'll talk about these things and many more. Our guest today is Mondo Gonzalez, co-host of Prophecy Watchers. Mondo is a graduate of Moody Bible Institute and Trinity International University. If you're new to the program and you don't know Mondo, he has a master's degree in Near East Archaeology and Languages. Over the last 20 years, he's done extensive archaeology work in Greece and Turkey, the island of Patmos, of course, where the book of Revelation was given, Israel, Jordan, Peru, and all over Egypt. Mondo, welcome to the program.
It's awesome to be here.
That clip we just heard, Jack Hibbs and Steve Hilton were both talking about the fires in California. Both of them came to the same conclusion, and both of them emphasized through that interview, it was about poor leadership and about an ideology, a worldview. And I just want to ask you the question, let's kind of break those two down. Describe to us the leadership crisis that we're facing in America.
There is no doubt that what we've seen over the past 75 years or so, that where you see, for lack of a better idea, you just liberalism, this idea of God not being the center, a movement and a departure away from a conservative framework of God and country. And that can happen on both sides. But no doubt, as we see, it's more entrenched in the progressive left. That's undeniable. And what we've been watching is over the last two or three decades, a lot of these policies, California being first and foremost, California, Oregon, and Washington. I grew up in Oregon. It's way different than when I was there as a kid. But these states have actually had the Democratic leftist leadership to implement some of these policies. And now here we are beginning to see the fruit of what those policies bring.
Yeah, it's really the fruit of that attack on meritocracy, right? You don't want to have the best and the brightest, and the whole DEI agenda now actually being worked out in front of our eyes. The lady that's in charge of making sure the water's in those fire hydrants paid $750,000 a year, and there's no water there. It is absolutely insane. 95% of the water of California being flushed out into the ocean. It is a deliberate manifestation of incompetence at the highest level. Well, let me ask you this. They both mentioned the ideology of the day. When you think about the New Green Deal and how everyone's always emphasizing we got to save the earth, isn't this just a modern form of pantheism? What is pantheism?
Pantheism comes from two Greek words, theism, which we know is God, and then pan, meaning all. So for a pantheist, they're going to see the entire universe, anything that is created, as being a part of God. God is a collective. God is not a singular individual, a singular being that has personality. But every part of the universe, every little bit as a total makes up God. So in their views, this is why they could say we're God, because we're part of that. But in reality, what it does is it takes the focus off of an individual being who's holy and righteous and a creator, a self-existent being, and then it puts it on everything. And so in one sense, it's just like Romans 1, that they worshiped the creation rather than the creator as an individual. So this is what we're seeing. When you come into the Green New Deal and all that, it's even personifying Mother Earth. We talk about Mother Earth. We talk about human nature. In those regards, you have Gaia, which is, again, another philosophy where the Earth is just a mother-type figure of the whole universe, but still not sentient of its own. This leads right in. As soon as you get rid of God in the Bible and that framework, you're going to come into going, this is where karma comes in too, in that we can't violate or hurt the green or the universe, because then the universe will come back and get us. Anybody that follows pantheism realizes that it certainly has a lot of inconsistencies. But again, this is the fruit of it. As soon as you put pantheism or the worship of the green or the creation above what we understand in the biblical order, that the pinnacle of God's creative order is man and woman, male and female, and they were called to lead and to take charge over the earth. But as soon as you turn that upside down, again, the sky's the limit for the bankruptcy of these policies. So the whole green idea and what they've been doing has as its foundation this bankrupt philosophy, no doubt.
In August of 2023, we watched Hawaii burn Maui. Jan and I talked about that. You did a number of programs on that as well. And we saw there that those who were in charge of the water were encouraging people to go back to the ancestral roots of worshiping water. And to the average American, that seems strange, but this is this form of pantheism. That's the reason there wasn't water there. This whole green agenda is like form of pantheism. Your worldview matters. You know, as a pastor for years, I've told people your worldview matters, and people kind of like roll their eyes. You've been a pastor and you know the frustration of that. And this is just the fruit of wickedness. Let me ask you this question. We're watching these fires take place, and some have speculated the 82nd Golden Globe Awards was emceed by Nikki Glaser. That night, it was filled with blasphemy, specifically saying that the creator God has no interest in the minds of people. It was just horrible. Is it possible that these fires and the consequences that we're seeing literally across the coast with all of these massive events, is this the hand of God?
In theology, when we talk about the wrath of God, there are many nuances of that, but two of them come out here. One is the idea of God's direct hand of judgment, that they said this and God responded in a very specific judgment, like we would see in a lot of things in the Bible. But the other wrath that you see is in Romans chapter 1, again, worshiping the creation, that God gave them over, that God abandoned them because of their rejection of him. So ultimately, God will say, okay, you guys want to worship the creation? And I think God has a lot of Dr. Phil moments. How's that working out for you? We don't even need, because we can't specifically say that she said this and God did this, but what we do know is what we can say with confidence is that God has stepped back and said, okay, you guys want to reject me? We started rejecting God, certainly in the 50s and 60s, kicking him out of school, kicking the Bible out of school, prayer, etc., where that was part of our culture. So now God just says, look, you guys have, again, switched over from worshiping and acknowledging me. Now you're over here creating these DEI policies and those are green policies, pantheistic policies, etc. And not only that, but then you mock. So again, how are your policies working out for you? And it's sad, unfortunate, because when you look at ancient Israel, there were godly people living in the land of Israel. And sadly, like Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. Why? Because he had to watch exactly a similar situation where the leadership rejected, mocked God, worshiped other idols, and God brought judgment on them. And he was caught up into it. Were there Christians that had houses burned down? Yes. So being a Christian in a godless nation, just like ancient Israel, sometimes we still get caught up into God's judgment on it.
And that's why we're looking forward to a new heavens, new earth. We're looking to the millennial kingdom. We're looking at Jesus coming. There are better days ahead. Victor Davis Hanson from the Hoover Institute, I think, is one of the greatest minds of our day. And many of us have been saying, when you abandon God, countries look like third world nations. That worldview, when it's applied, the fruit of that will destroy a nation. Where you have Christianity, it's applied, the Protestant work ethic, you have the blessing of God. And I just want you to listen to his summary that he made this last week, and I want you to comment on that.
To finish, what we're seeing in California is a state with 40 million people, and yet the people who run it feel that it should return to a 19th century pastoral condition. They are de-civilizing the state and de-industrializing the state and de-farming the state, but they're not telling the 40 million people that their lifestyles will have to revert back to the 19th century when you had no protection from fire, you didn't have enough water in California, you didn't have enough power, you didn't pump oil. So we are deliberately making these decisions not to develop energy, not to develop a timber industry, not to protect the insurance industry, not to protect houses and property. And we're doing it in almost a purely nihilistic fashion. And Karen Bass should resign. She came to the airport back from Africa. She had nothing to say. She was confronted at the airport. Why were you in Africa? Why did you cut the fire department? They cut the fire department by almost $18 million. They gave fire protective equipment to Ukraine's first responders. And she had nothing to say. She had nothing to say because she couldn't say anything. I don't want to be too pessimistic or bleak tonight, but this is one of the most alarming symptoms of a society gone mad. And if this continues, and if this were to spread to other states, we would become a third world country if we're not in parts already.
Will we become de-civilized because of this ideology? Is that possible, Mondo?
With this ideology, I think anything is possible when we think out in the ramifications. Part of the challenge with all this is we wonder too, because we understand that ultimately the progressive left, they want to destroy the middle class. They want slaves. They want people dependent on the government. This is socialism. This isn't anything new. We can go back and read the playbooks of Karl Marx and others, but ultimately they want slaves. So the question also we know in the global order is you want chaos. They want things to be expensive. They want to have where people, again, are slaves and that maybe they can't drive. And this is why there's no energy, because they don't want cheap gas. They don't want people driving. Again, going back to the green worship of carbon credits. That really is the key. When you think about this philosophy, there are no limits to its foolishness, its stupidity, and also the desire for chaos. Because out of chaos, when people are desperate, people will naturally turn to anybody that will rescue them. Historically speaking, chaos brings in more government. But you think the wise person would be like, no, the government has clearly failed us here, as was just mentioned in the clip. These are complete, absolute failures. Is it incompetence or is it intentional? That's what I always wonder.
Having traveled around many parts of the world and preached the gospel, I can tell you the gospel of Jesus Christ and the word of God brings civilization out of the darkness. For 50 years now in America, that's been attacked. You're destroying their culture. I'm telling you, there's a better culture. God has something better for people. God's ways are not man's ways. God's got a better system. You're listening to Understand the Times Radio. I'm Mark Henry, filling in for Jan Markell. Today, our guest is Mondo Gonzalez from Prophecy Watchers. And Monday, President Trump is going to be sworn in as the 47th president.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Well, that was January 20th, 2017, when he was sworn in as the 45th president of the United States. Monday, he's going to be sworn in as a 47th president. Mondo, many of us have been praying for President Trump for his safety. I want to ask you a question. The Bible says that God raises up kings and removes kings. Has the hand of God been in this process, bringing us to this moment in history?
I think as a biblical Christian, you just, again, quoted the verse. We absolutely believe that God is sovereign over every single leader that is raised up in America for God's own reasons, which we don't always understand. But in this regard, there is reason to be hopeful because of many areas. Now, we all recognize in the history of America, every single vote that has ever been cast has always been for somebody who's imperfect because Jesus is the only perfect one. So since we're dealing in the human realm, everybody's been imperfect. People like to focus on Trump's imperfections, so be it, fine. But what we also know is that Trump's platform, his policies, absolutely are a haven, a wonder, a beauty in contrast to what we've seen the last 4 years or what would have been under a Kamala administration. Israel, even the pro-life movement, even though I understand it's not perfect, America first, jobs, again, economic prosperity. But I don't anticipate Trump to get up there and require everybody to read their Bible every day. That's never been the job of the president. But is he going to put America first? Absolutely. And is that something to be hopeful and to be thankful that God is allowing that? And also for the freedom of speech, which we know ultimately is the gospel? Of course we should rejoice.
Absolutely. And then the thought that he might be able to appoint three more individuals to the Supreme Court. Again, that's just the merciful hand of God, and I am just so thankful for that. Let me ask you this. What do you think his role is going to be in this next 4 years in the Middle East, and how do you see him interfacing with Israel and dealing with the problems there?
It goes on to what we've seen already, that what we have seen is that for those that study the Middle East and they understand Islamic thinking or theology, the only thing that is understood by the Islamic world is force. That's just the case. Hamas understands nothing but force. Hezbollah, we've seen that. And we've seen how whenever Israel has sought in the past to negotiate or to appease, we think about going back to World War II and Chamberlain, and we understand that. You don't appease bullies. What Trump has been known for is strength. And the phraseology, which we'll probably hear more about, is security or peace through strength. And that is no better place to have that apply than in the Middle East. So I think already Trump has put it out there. People respect him when he says he's going to do something. He does it, and he's not afraid to bring that strength through.
Yeah, he's going to shake things up because he knows how to push back, whether it's China or Russia or those in the Middle East. Let me ask you this. Are we seeing the rise of the Ten Kings? Recently, I heard you speak on the subject of the Ten Kings in Revelation 17. Let me just read a couple of verses here. It says, "Then the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who are yet to receive a kingdom, but they received authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. These have one purpose, that they give their power and authority to the beast."
I will order federal workers to get back to the office in person or be terminated from the job immediately. And we will create the new Department of Government Efficiency headed by Elon Musk. And no, he's not taking the presidency. I like having smart people. You know, they're on a new kick. Russia, 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 Ukraine, 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 all the different hoaxes. And the new one is President Trump has ceded the presidency to Elon Musk. No, no, that's not happening. But Elon's done an amazing job. Isn't it nice to have smart people that we can rely on? Right? Don't we want that? He's done a great job.
Mondo, you did an amazing job with this passage in Revelation 17. And my question to you is Elon Musk one of these potential 10 kings that are going to rise up in the last day?
The typical interpretation is that the 10 kings are representative of 10 regions, like the Club of Rome. I think that's traditional. Certainly, that's not required from the biblical text. But my thought and my presentation was that these 10 kings very specifically, absolutely legitimately, could be called 10 influencers, 10 people who have tremendous influence. As you read in the Revelation 17 passage, they give their authority and their capabilities over to the Antichrist in that future time in order for him to fulfill his kingdom. And so the suggestion I made is, are these 10 technocrats? And no doubt, Elon Musk is probably the most well-known or the epitome of a technocrat in that regard. And so in talking about this, even 2 years ago, I talked about Elon Musk. And now it seems that in one sense, he's sitting at the right hand of Trump, influencing him, just like we saw Bill Gates, another technocrat, influencing the Biden administration during COVID. These technocrats have no kingdom. The Bible says that. They have no kingdom, but yet they still have tremendous influence. And could these people like Elon Musk? I think absolutely. They are the pinnacle of what one of the 10 kings are, these 10 technocrats.
Is this parallel to Daniel chapter 2 when it talks about the 10 toes?
I would say it's more in parallel to Daniel chapter 7.
Tell us about Daniel chapter 7. How does that parallel?
Well, in Daniel 2, it's talking about the toes, but Daniel 7 specifically is talking about the kings. You have these king figures and the Antichrist rises out amongst them. And so it makes you wonder whether the Antichrist himself will be a technocrat or an oligarch to some degree, the way he comes on the scene. So I see the connection more because Revelation 17 and Daniel 7 apply a little bit more specifically to these particular figures and the way that they are involved, their companions, the way that the Aramaic works there in Daniel 7.
I was blown away when you pointed out it says that these 10 kings, they give their power and authority to the beast, the Antichrist. You think about the power that Elon Musk has just with his satellites. That is a power any country would love to have. Or you think about Bill Gates. He's starting 2 nuclear electric plants. Again, something that every nation would love to have. That's a whole nother discussion. But your point is well taken. These guys have tremendous money, power, and influence that anyone in authority would love to have to control the world. Having said that, let's think about the Middle East for just a moment. You spent a lot of time in Israel. You've studied over there. God has a plan for ethnic Israel. And Mark Hitchcock made some interesting observations about Israel, about Iran and Turkey.
Barring some very unusual event, I believe 2025 will be a year of increased strength and momentum for Israel. The enemies of Israel are all on the run. This is unlike anything in Israel's modern history. Iran's far-reaching tentacles have been cut. Iran is isolated and desperate, and Israel now is emboldened and energized. And emboldened Israel may even do what they've wanted to do for many years, that is knock out Iran's nuclear sites. CNN has a headline that says, Israel strikes Syria 480 times and seizes territory as Netanyahu pledges to change the face of the Middle East. The collapse of the Assad regime has allowed Israel to go in and hit Syria, again at the time when I'm making this video, 480 times. They're knocking out strategic weapons stockpiles, places where they believe chemical weapons are, destroying air assets. Benjamin Netanyahu has called this a dramatic new chapter. He said the collapse of the Syrian regime is a direct result of the severe blows we struck Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. He says the Axis has not yet disappeared, but as I promised, we're changing the face of the Middle East. And I believe this stunning change will continue. The Times of Israel has a headline that says the IDF sees chance for strikes on Iran nuclear sites after knocking out Syria air defenses.
As a student of history and military history specifically, I am literally numb as I've watched 2024 unfold. You think about as the year started last year, the reality that the world is facing this real existential threat of Iran having a nuclear weapon, and it's like no one was going to be able to stop that. And here we are with their whole aerial defense system totally dismantled, and Israel can literally do anything they want. I almost feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, Mondo, I feel like this is the hand of God, like something we would read in the Old Testament where the enemies were just blown away and it was totally unexpected. It was totally like out of the norm. Is that correct?
Absolutely. There's nothing that Israel does that's not in the overall sovereignty and providence of God. It reminds me, again, going back to Ezekiel 37, the dry bones vision about God bringing them to life. And it's very clear that when they come back, they become, verse 10, an exceedingly great army, a force, a very specific force, a very great force in Hebrew. What we've been seeing is no doubt that is fulfilled right now. But everything that's happening as it relates to the expansion and the buffer zones is going to create this hatred even more so. What has it done? It's shown Iran that it cannot beat Israel conventionally. And they've already responded to increasing their nuclear program, etc. And that's ultimately what's on the table, which is going to bring in Turkey. The other thing, too, is Turkey now is taking a role in Syria far greater now that the vacuum's there. Iran is gone. Turkey's Sunni. Iran is Shiite. Turkey is central in Ezekiel 38. So all of this is coming together. As Mark just said, 2025 is going to be absolutely incredible to see Ezekiel 37, 38, and 39 move forward.
Those of us who have studied Ezekiel 38 and the Gog-Magog War, we know that Persia, Iran, has a huge role in that. And so we kind of always assume that's why they're so strong. And yet we see them being neutralized in many ways. Doesn't mean that they're not still going to attack. Doesn't mean they're not going to still be involved in that. But we're seeing Turkey take a whole new role of leadership there in the Middle East. Is this the revived Ottoman Empire?
That is exactly what Erdogan has said. And scholars who will look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, you look at the House of Dagarma, most of the names there, you have Rosh, you have the land of the North, Magog, and you have Persia. But more of the figures align with Turkey. if you look at a percentage of all the names listed there, the bigger percentage refers to Turkey, which shows their greater influence. He has said quite clearly, his desire is to retake Jerusalem. His desire is to re-glorify the Ottoman Empire. And he wants to be seen as the main caliph in the Fertile Crescent Caliphate going from Turkey all the way down into Saudi Arabia.
We can be assured of this, that whatever happens, friends, in the Middle East, Israel is going to be standing at the end. And I think Benjamin Netanyahu said something so profound in a speech not long ago to that very end. Listen to this.
King David established our capital 3,000 years ago. In Jerusalem, King Solomon built our temple, which stood for many centuries. In Jerusalem, Jewish exiles from Babylon rebuilt the temple, which stood for many more centuries. In Jerusalem, the Maccabees rededicated that temple and restored Jewish sovereignty in this land. And it was here in Jerusalem, some 2,000 years later, that the soldiers of Israel spoke three immortal words, Ha Abayit Bi'adenu, the Temple Mount is in our hands, words that lifted the spirit of the entire nation. We are in Jerusalem and we are here to stay.
Israel is here to stay. Mondo, thank you for being with us today.
Great to be here, Mark.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, Ken Michael and Pastor Josh Schwartz will be talking with Seth Gruber. Don't miss it.
We hope you'll stay in touch with us online through olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Write us through the mail at Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. In this age of fake news and false teaching, thank you for trusting Understanding the Times Radio and Olive Tree Ministries. There are so many questions about the eternity God has prepared for the believer. Will we have bodies in heaven? Will we recognize other people, such as our friends and family? What does having a future in heaven mean for us while still here on earth? Author and illustrator Todd Hampson answers dozens of questions about our future in his newest book, The Nonprofit's Guide to Heaven. Discover what the Bible says about the wonders of eternity. He outlines an informative overview of what happens between now and eternity. The book is packed with engaging infographics and insight and will transform your understanding of heaven and the afterlife while energizing you to live more boldly in the present. Find The Nonprofit's Guide to Heaven in our online store at olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Or call our office at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444.
Guess who's the only institution that we can actually trust to uphold a righteous and godly standard that will safeguard children's right to life and then their right to a mother and father? The church, the blood-bought bride of Christ.
We know you can't always be by our radio, so if you miss a program, visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. And then go to radio, where we feature both the audio and video version of our program. You can also catch the program at oneplace.com, on our Rumble or YouTube channel, and all of our social media, and on his channel, Christian TV. In part two of our programming, Ken Michael and Pastor Josh Schwartz talk to Seth Gruber. Here is the balance of today's programming.
Over 65 million murdered unborn children in America since 1973. gender-confused adolescents mutilating themselves at the applause of our federal government, pro-life sidewalk counselors being arrested, parents who speak at school board meetings being labeled domestic terrorists by the federal government. We're all asking the same question right now, aren't we? How did we get here? What bred this culture of death that is targeting my children and my family? What happened to the Christendom that I knew and the robust family culture in America? The answer.
In his opening statement, my good friend Senator Whitehouse said, I want to quote, reproductive justice is economic justice, close quote. Do you agree with that?
I might, as an economist, use the word rights, but yeah, I do agree with that.
Okay. That's not true for the baby, is it?
Well, first of all, I would refer to a fetus, not a baby.
Yeah, but that's, well, a fetus. I refer to it as a baby. That's not true as a for the baby, is it? There is no economic justice for the baby because the baby's dead, right?
I wouldn't refer. I don't really know how to answer your question. I would refer to
the baby dead or alive?
We're referring to a fetus.
Okay. Is the fetus dead or alive after an abortion?
The fetus would be dead after an abortion.
Okay. Right. It's a baby at 21 weeks. Okay. The baby can feel pain, right?
Yes.
And the baby's pretty developed, right?
Yes.
And do you know the name of the procedure that the doctor would use to abort that baby at 21 weeks?
I'm not a doctor, but I believe it's a DNR.
It's called dilation and evacuation. And then the doctor would take what's called a Sofer clamp. It's really a pair of pliers with sharp teeth on the end. And without giving the baby any pain medication, and start tearing the baby apart. Is that right?
As far as I understand the procedure.
Yeah, and she might start with the legs and pull them out, and the arms and pull them out, right? And then she might go for the heart or the spine and just pull the baby out piece by piece.
Welcome to Understanding Our Times. I'm Ken Michael. Joining me is Pastor Josh Schwartz. 65 million child sacrifices have happened since Roe v. Wade was passed in 1973. And we need to ask some serious questions. Where are we at? How did we get here? Where are we going? And we're going to talk with our guest today. He's the CEO and founder of the White Rose Resistance. He just came out with a film called The 1916 Project. This is a must-see film for everyone. It can be seen on X. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Seth Gruber. Seth, we're so honored to have you with us today. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, brothers.
Seth, in that clip there and in your documentary, a clip from it, you asked the question, how did we get here? And throughout the film, you point directly to a woman named Margaret Sanger. You talk about her history and her influence on Hitler and the rest. Can we talk about this relationship with Hitler and other eugenicists and how important it is for us to confront people like this?
At the risk of sounding reductionistic or overly simplistic, I did title my book, The 1916 Project, referring to the year 1916, when Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, opened her very first clinic in the Brownsville neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York. That is, for all intents and purposes, brothers, the first Planned Parenthood clinic, which is now the best funded 501c3 in human history, the largest abortion provider in the world, the largest provider of the pornographic, obscene, comprehensive sexuality education in America's public schools, and now the second largest provider of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for America's gender-confused youth. That one organization can claim all four of those things. But I do contend that Margaret Sanger is probably the most successful leftist, secular, moral revolutionary of the 20th century whose fingerprints, if you will, on today's cultural insanity is greater than any other revolutionary that spawned out of the 20th century. And so naturally, there's always just these like mind-blowing connections, right, between all of the evil weirdos of the 20th century. So in the book and film, we really expose a lot of the cohesion and connectedness of all of these various movements of death that have always set themselves up against the knowledge of God. Why do we make the Hitler connection? Because the cultural consciousness in America uniquely goes to Hitler for all things evil. It is interesting when you actually look at the historically documented, provable links of the Hitlerian eugenicists in the Third Reich and American leftists. For example, at the Nuremberg trials, brothers, the Nazis, before they were hung, actually cited an American United States Supreme Court decision in their defense. It was called Buck versus Bell. And we talk about it in the film. It was an 8-1 decision that allowed the state to forcibly sterilize Americans considered a threat to the gene pool, that white elite Americans decided you shouldn't be allowed to reproduce, literally. Like, let me clarify what I mean by that. That means you're forcibly tying people down to a medical table and sterilizing them against their knowledge or against their wishes, okay? In the next 10 years, over 70,000 Americans were forcibly sterilized by state governments in America. Guess who endorsed Buck versus Bell when it was decided? Guess who celebrated and endorsed it? Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. She had a board member when she founded Planned Parenthood in 1921. His name was Lothrop Stoddard. He was the exalted cyclops of the Massachusetts KKK. He's the founding board member of Planned Parenthood, brothers. And one of his books was called The Menace of the Underman. Ooh, right? Like, who's the underman? Well, for him, it was Black Slavs, Italians, Jews, and the mentally and physically disabled. And so they're a menace, right? Because they're preventing humanity from creating the Ubermenschen, right? The super race, or the superhuman, if you will. Well, that book was so well loved by some individuals like Heinrich Himmler and Joseph Goebbels and Adolf Hitler that Lothrop Stoddard, Sanger's financier, friend, advisor, and board member when she founded Planned Parenthood, was actually invited to the Third Reich by the Nazis. And Lothrop Stoddard is the only American on record to have had a one-on-one meeting with Adolf Hitler after he rose to power. It goes on and on, brothers. But the point is this. While Sanger may have had more of a scalpel approach to eugenics and Hitler had more of a sledgehammer approach to eugenics, they were both operating off of the same worldview. They both drank from the same cesspool and were influenced by the same ideologies. And that ideology is called eugenics. And we could spend the next hour unpacking that. But these links and this history has been mostly hidden from the American people. And here's why. Because it indicts the entire liberal establishment today that walks in the same religious, philosophical, and political tradition of some of the most evilest men in the 20th century. And we prove all of those links in the book, in the film, The 1916 Project. So that's the beginning of an answer.
Yeah, and wasn't one of Margaret Sanger's goals to depopulate the black culture? Because she targeted them when she came over here. Isn't that correct?
That's right. You're pretty much right over the target. So the thing about eugenicists for your audience is that I would fear a eugenicist more than a racist. And here's why. A racist might boil down humanity and discrimination to melanin, skin color, or maybe one ethnicity, right? Or one racial class. But a racist might like really hone in their discrimination into one narrow box of a certain ethnicity or a certain color of skin. A eugenicist has a very wide cast net of who they could potentially discriminate against because a eugenicist is concerned with genes, right? Mm-hmm. Good genes and bad genes. For example, Margaret Sanger, people don't know this about the history of Planned Parenthood, she called for sterilization and segregation camps to be set up on American soil, brothers, to house all the undesirables. She called them the morons and the misfits. Like if you had a history of alcoholism, if you had a history of criminal behavior, if you were an epileptic, if you had a history of poverty and you weren't contributing to society, if you were mentally and physically disabled, these were all the different categories of the individuals that for Sanger represented a problem. These were the kind of people that had to be dealt with. She supported things, guys, like sterilizing poor minorities by putting a sterilizing agent in the waters of urban neighborhoods to sterilize the poor against their knowledge, and that a cure could be provided by the government if they decided to allow those poor people to reproduce and have children again. Margaret Sanger was a real demon. So that's why eugenics is far more sinister and dangerous than maybe just racism. But eugenicism always results in some form of racism. So for her, Margaret Sanger, she may have found a black person, guys, that was highly educated, well-to-do, well-connected, from a good family. Oh, and by the way, and agreed with her, that she would have loved. But by and large, her eugenicism did result in abject racism against American blacks. And so in 1939, the American Birth Control League, before it was renamed Planned Parenthood, her organization sponsored and launched the Negro Project. That's what she called it. It was an initiative of Planned Parenthood. And here was the opening proposal of the Negro Project. She said, you know, the massive Negroes, particularly in the South, are still breeding carelessly and disastrously, with the result that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and least fit. By the way, you'll hear that word fit and unfit used by eugenicists all the time. They believe some people are fit and some people are unfit, and the unfit should not be allowed to have children. They should either be prevented from having children, or they should actually be sterilized, or if you go the whole Hitlerian route, they should actually be rounded up and killed.
I got a question. Thank you for laying all of that out beautifully, just connecting all the dots between Hitlerism and eugenicists and Margaret Sanger. So the question is this. Over the last 50 years in the late 20th, early 21st century, Margaret Sanger is like the heroine of women's rights. How did that happen?
Margaret Sanger was one of the first open evangelists for the joys of the flesh. Basically, like, Margaret Sanger was trailblazing the path that the Woodstock sexual revolutionary feminists would later follow 40 years later. You understand? She was blazing a trail of sexual liberation when that was still super taboo to talk about, like, have sex with a ton of people. Who cares, right? If it feels good, do it, right? Like, marriage is oppressive. The Catholic Church and the Protestants are evil. Like, this outdated Christian morality, man. They're just trying to keep you under the thumb of the Christendom patriarchy. That was not popular to talk about in 1916, 1919, 1920. So she was like a radical sexual liberation theorist. Let's see, 1920, 30, 40, 50, 60, 40 or 45 years before the sexual revolution would take off as we know it. So she was, I guess, ahead of her time. But as brothers who know human history, church history, guys, of course, you recognize that progressivism is never progressive. It's regressive. Like, we're just going back to the Asherah poles and the Baal statues, because the Asherah poles was orgies and temple prostitutes. Free love, baby. But what happens when you live like that? Well, 9 months later, guys, you got a problem, right? Well, that's why we have Baal.
Yep.
So just pass the child through the fires of Planned Parenthood. Oh, sorry, Moloch today. So the whole, like, oh, well, if it feels good, do it, and then we'll deal with the baby later, is not a new progressive idea. It's a very ancient idea. Well, in her first magazine, guys, Margaret Sanger writes this. Ready for this? She says, our ultimate objective, here it is unlimited sexual gratification without the burden of those unwanted children, end quote, from her first magazine before she launches Planned Parenthood. So why is she a heroine, you ask me? Why was she lauded as the patron saint of feminism? Why was there a bust of her head at the Smithsonian? Why was the Margaret Sanger Award given to Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton? Why did Barack Obama speak at Planned Parenthood events? Why was Kamala Harris trying really hard to get the Margaret Sanger Award? Guess who coined the term birth control, guys? Margaret Sanger coined the term birth control. Now, contraception had been around for millennia, right? You can go back thousands of years. People were always doing preventative things to not get pregnant. That's always been around, but it was never like perfected, modernized, and culturally mainstreamed until Margaret Sanger. She coined the term birth control. Now, of course, she was a eugenicist, so she meant birth controlling. Like, she wanted to control what kind of people were birthed. She didn't mean birth control as a way to help poor black and brown women plan their parenthood. Right, Margaret Sanger, she just had such a big heart for those poor families. She just wanted to help them plan their parenthood. No, 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 no. She emphasized the control aspect of birth control, if you know what I mean, because that's what every eugenicist is after. So she basically ushered in so much of the culture of death that we're experiencing today while it was still taboo. She was tearing down cultural standards that help keep society in check, those healthy guardrails, right? Like, laws are the wise restraints that make men free. No, no, no. We got to get rid of all the restraints to usher in a renaissance of paganism. And my contention is that no one is more responsible for today's cultural insanity and the culture of death that has all of us kind of freaked out to hand this country to our children and grandchildren than Margaret Sanger.
And then if you really want to put a dagger into the culture, she kind of handed the baton off to Kinsey, who sexualized children. And that, to me, what we're doing to our children in this country today is an abomination, yeah, and it needs to be eradicated.
That all goes together too, by the way. The whole Kinsey sexualizing kids, like Sanger's got her name all over that. Her medical director founded CECUS, the Sexuality Information Education Council of the United States, the first group to pioneer the radical pornographic sex ed in the schools. Her medical director launched CECUS at the Kinsey Institute with a board member named Wardell Pomeroy, who was one of Kinsey's gay lovers. Like, it's always all gone together. And today, Planned Parenthood is the largest provider of that obscene sex ed in the schools.
Exactly. As we transition here, we just had an election, and Josh and I have been across the country and speaking to people.
Jezebel fell from her tower.
Yeah, we just got back from Europe. People are excited. They're like, wow, we can't wait to see what this administration does. I want to have you take a look at a clip that we put together, and then we'll comment on it.
Our message to gay Americans tonight is this. You're free to marry who you want, if you want, without the government standing in your way. But that doesn't mean that boys get to compete with girls in girls' sports, or you do genital mutilation and chemical castration on our children.
What Vivek Ramaswamy is communicating, he's not saying this, but it's what he's communicating. It's what he's assumed. Assumed ideas are dangerous. That gay marriage is somehow neutral. But he says, what did he say? But leave the kids alone. Don't chemically castrate them and sexualize them, because that's not neutral. Yo, Vivek, it's all part of the same revolution. It's all part of the same movement. What do we mean by this? Gay marriage is not neutral because gay marriage is a misnomer. Asking someone if they support gay marriage is like asking someone if they support square circles. The historical definition of marriage means that anything that is not that is by definition not marriage. For all of human history, in every society, marriage has been defined as the sexually complementary, permanent, and exclusive union of a man and a woman. Why? Because of the children, which he says we need to protect, right? Guess what, Vivek Ramaswamy? Protecting marriage protects children. Redefining marriage obliterates marriage, and in so doing, harms children.
You're watching Understanding Our Times. I'm Ken Michael, along with Pastor Josh Schwartz, and our guest today is CEO and founder of the White Rose Resistance, Seth Gruber. Seth, as we've gone across the country, many people think with this new administration in there that we're going to fix a lot of the problems in this country. I caution people because there are many people in the coming administration that agree with Vivek and other people that, hey, we've kind of given up on same-sex marriage. That's gone. We're just going to submit to that. And it's here. It's not going anywhere. Give us your take on what Vivek and others are saying about what's going on in our culture.
That's what they said about Roe v. Wade.
Exactly.
Okay, so listen, I voted for Trump, okay? Because I believe that Christians shouldn't vote for Jezebel. I know, shocker. Exactly. I think it's a sin to vote for Jezebel. She did fall from her tower on November 5th. The dogs may not be licking her blood up yet, but I think that was the mercy of God, brothers.
Yes.
Trump is no savior. He's a tourniquet. So if Kamala was Jezebel, then Trump is a tourniquet. He'll help stop the bleeding and give us time to wake people up. But we're in such a mess in the culture that we can't vote our way out of it. Let me pause, because people who attribute too much impact to politics, they sometimes get frustrated when I say things like that. Yes, politics has a role. I just said I voted for Trump. And I hope every Christian would vote for Trump as a vote against Kamala. Yeah. Like, Trump has his issues. I've lost donors, guys, for ripping Trump. Unfortunately, there's not enough pro-life leaders in the movement. There are some amazing pro-life leaders in the pro-life movement, but there's not enough, in my opinion, who are willing to publicly critique him, hold him accountable, which I do. And I've lost donors for ripping into Vivek Ramaswamy, Carrie Lake, and Trump for some of their pro-abortion rhetoric, some of their pro-gay marriage rhetoric, because I believe, like Francis Schaeffer said, the church tends to deal in bits and pieces with ideologies in the culture rather than in totalities and seeing how it all goes together. So what do I mean by that? As I said on my show, actually, when I talked about this clip of Vivek saying, gay marriage is great. Just sleep with whoever you want, marry whoever you want. We're not coming for that. But that doesn't mean that boys should be able to compete against girls or that you can sexually mutilate our children through transgender surgeries. And what I said on my show, the Seth Gruber Show, which you can subscribe to Rumble, YouTube, or any audio platform, is I said, Vivek, if biology doesn't matter when it comes to marriage and parenting, why should biology suddenly matter when it comes to transgenderism? If biology can't secure a children's right to their mother and father, then why should biology secure a child's sexual identity? Exactly. If minors want to liberate themselves from the bondage of biology to secure their authentic identity, who they feel they are on the inside, then who is Vivek to stop them? Now, of course, I believe we should stop the transgender surgeries. My point is, you can't say biology doesn't matter to marriage and parenting. And so two gay dudes who want to get a kid, and you know that at least one of those men has no biological relationship to that child. That's how gay marriage works. That's how biology works. At least one of those men has zero biological ties or relationship to those kids. So redefining marriage redefined parenthood and allowed one or two biologically unrelated adults to literally buy children and raise them as their parents. So apparently to the new RNC platform, the Republican National Committee, which unfortunately Trump's language on marriage and pro-life, his soft, stupid language helped change the RNC's platform. Let me remind everyone what happened about 4 or 5 months ago. The Republican National Committee took, it was something like a 1,200-word statement on pro-life, and it called for protection of the unborn from conception. It called for federal protections for the unborn, and it reduced it down to like 90 words, and it just said, we oppose late-term abortion. Yeah, most registered Democrats, guys, oppose late-term abortions. And this is what we mean when we say that like today's Republicans look like Democrats 15 or 20 years ago, because people aren't willing to stand for a standard. Guess who's the only institution that we can actually trust to uphold a righteous and godly standard that will safeguard children's right to life and then their right to a mother and father? The church, the blood-bought bride of Christ. Dominion is inevitable. Nature abhors a vacuum. What I mean by that is when you rip Christianity out of a culture, guess what, brothers? We don't all get coexist bumper stickers, okay? There is no such thing as a libertarian, pluralistic, utopian society where we go, okay, so y'all on the left side over here, you want to chemically castrate minors and chop off their genitals. And then us over here on the right, we think that we shouldn't do that. So let's just figure out how to get along and live in this land of the free and the home of the brave. No, that's not happening. Someone's worldview, someone's ideology is going to win, is going to actually be the standard. So why not the worldview that founded this country? Why not the worldview that's called Christianity, pure and undefiled religion, to care for orphans and widows in their distress? Unless the church flatulent becomes the church militant, it will become the church irrelevant. And by the way, by militant, I don't mean AR-15s, although I'm saving up for my next one. Amen. What I mean is militant in righteousness, militant in fervor for your king in the public square. When the church stands up, Satan sits down. And when the church sits down, Satan stands up. And he will take any inches that we abdicate because maybe we're too pious or self-righteous to vote for Trump. Or maybe we think we just preach the gospel and you read too many Rick Warren and Andy Stanley books. And you just think, I'm just going to tell people Jesus loves them, but I'm not going to do anything to stand against the tides of darkness that are fundamentally demonic, that are seeking to murder the baby in the womb. If they don't get them in the womb, they'll sexually confuse them and mutilate them outside the womb. You want to know what's new right now, gentlemen? It's not evil. It's not sexually mutilating children. It's not child sacrifice. It's not any of that. That's all super ancient and pagan. It's just a renaissance. You want to know what's new? Is the silence and cowardice of the blood-bought bride of Christ. That's what's new. That's only been about the last 100-ish years of the church in the West. What the church used to be marked by was iconoclasm. That's not a word most Protestants are comfortable with, but we're going to go there with you guys because I love your ministry. Iconoclasm. What does that mean? Tearing down idols, smashing idols. That's what Gideon did. That's the spirit of Gideon. That's what that awesome brother did a year ago at the Iowa State Capitol that had a Baphomet idol on the Capitol grounds in Iowa. Exactly. And he literally ripped it down like a Gideon. And they threw him in jail. They prosecuted him for it. But of course, you can show porn to minors in the public school system, and it's fine. But if a Christian legislator rips down a Satan statue in the Iowa State Capitol, they find him and try to throw him in jail. That tells you everything you need to know about the American cultural moment that we're in. And if we don't begin to bring the full counsel of God and bring it into conflict with the demonic ideologies of the day, like Jack Hibbs, my earthly hero and mentor, does, like Gary Hamrick does. If we're not going to do that, you should expect nothing to change in America, brothers and sisters. You should expect it to get far worse. We have been asleep at the wheel. Those are my thoughts on the next 4 years.
You answered my next question exactly, because my question was this: what does the believer do? Because we can't say the church anymore, because the majority of churches are woke. So we have a remnant group of followers of Jesus that now have to do exactly what you just told us to do. Stand up, and fight against the atrocity of sin, iniquity, and transgression that is running rampant in our liberalizing RNC.
So seek knowledge, seek understanding. Buy my book, watch the film, go to the1916project.com, the1916project.com. The hardcover, this is the paperback, but the hardcover comes with a timeline that's a reflection of the chalkboard scene in the film. We went like old school Glenn Beck chalkboard style.
Sure.
That shows you how the insanity of the 21st century was created by a bunch of demoniacs, sexual revolutionaries. And then the film is streaming on X, formerly known as Twitter. You can watch it. And any church can host a screening, which is super cool. So if you're listening to this, you're an elder, you're a lay pastor, you're a congregant, get your church to host a screening. Bring this to your people. Movie nights at churches are very popular. People love to come together to learn and watch a film. So if you go to the1916project.com, you can request a screening at your church. You can host it. You can pick up the book. A great homeschool resource. You'll learn more about bad ideas and how we got here in an accessible, condensed version than maybe any other resource out there right now. And we just love your ministry. We appreciate your voice. And thank you for letting me ramble.
We certainly love your ministry. And we just want to bless you however we can. If there's anything we can do, please let us know. Our guest today has been Seth Gruber, the White Rose Resistance. Seth, thank you for being on our program today. And may the Lord continue to bless you.
Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. For some reason, God has you here at this time and on assignment. Be encouraged as we watch all of the predicted events fall into place.